Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Moraz. Today, our guest is Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent as we talk about city business. And Mayor Trent, welcome as always to The Front Page.
Thanks, Chuck. We're always glad to be here.
Well, we'll start with a major news item in a sense. I know that Morehead recently, only recently, hired a brand new building inspector to replace Joe Parsons, who left in February. And now it looks like you'll be looking for another building inspector.
We had went through a search process of about 6 weeks. Had gone through several different candidates. Had went through interviews of four people and had narrowed it down to two very good candidates. Based on the interview process, we hired Beth Day, Elizabeth Day, she's known as well. Beth came in, took her test. She got her level one just last week. But unfortunately for her, there's some personal circumstances changed drastically over the last 2 weeks, which enabled her to not be involved as much as she would like. And it looks like for the next few months, she's going to need to be taking care of family first. And she realizes that we are a busy office. She actually told me after she got in there that she didn't realize we were that busy. This is a lady who had worked for 2 years in Lexington's office and also worked for the building inspector's office in Sarasota, Florida. So she just said that the drive from where she lived, she just recently moved from the Winchester, Boonesboro area to Richmond. It was just too much. And so we had a nice conversation on Tuesday morning, and she just said, I'm sorry to do this, but she said, I have to do it for my family. And like we always tell people, we've had a few people leave, and we've added a few people. And, you know, family comes first. I mean, we want you to be there. If you're able to be there with us, then we expect you to do your job to the to the specifications of your job duties and to the expectations, I should say. So once she felt like she couldn't fulfill those, I really have to give it to her that give her a pat on the back that she came and said that, you know, she can't do that. And so what we've done, I accepted the resignation on Tuesday morning. We have a candidate in mind. I've called that candidate. That candidate has accepted. We can't release the name at this time because the way we do the process, there has to be a drug screening and some paperwork, and also that candidate has to be confirmed, I guess is the word, with city council. We're going to have another city council meeting coming up on May 22nd. That person will hopefully be confirmed. And then once that happens, they will begin work Monday, June 5th in our office. The good thing about what we've done to protect ourselves in a situation like this, when Joe left, Joe left with a certain amount of certification. He was a level 3 certification, which meant that we had the ones before him, level 1, level 2, as well as expanded jurisdiction. So once he left, we have to go back and try to find someone who either has a level 1, level 2, or level 3. If not, they'd be willing to take the test right away, which is what she did to gain level 1. So in the interim, we had hired, on a contract basis, Mr. Philip Hurt, who's a level 2 building inspector, who's been coming to the office and working Wednesdays 10 to 2 and taking appointments. We've now asked him to expand that to Wednesdays and Fridays until the new person takes over and is able to get the requisite certification. So we don't see any kind of lapse in service. Mr. Hurt's been there for almost 2 months, and he's gained a lot of respect of the local builders and contractors he's worked with. So it's unfortunate, but I think it's going to be best for everybody, and we're making sure that no service will be interrupted for our office.
Yeah, that was the main question I had for you next. What would be the immediate impact of this surprising resignation by Ms. Day?
We don't anticipate any of that. What she did, too, is I really believe in cross-training in our office. The various folks, we have 7 people in our office besides myself. Obviously, the city attorney doesn't cross-train, but the other ones do, the clerks, our deputy clerk, our city clerk, and then the assistant, who is Sherry Watson. Sherry is assistant to that building inspector position, which includes many things. People don't realize, and I think when they come into here from a bigger town, a larger city, larger cities have so many they're so compartmentalized. You know, you just do this. Well, when you come to Moorhead or smaller towns like us, you know, you're the ABC administrator, you're the building inspector, you're the city planner. You go out and make sure yards get mowed, trash get, you know, you fill out different kinds of permits. I mean, there's so many different things that go on with that. So we saw that, and fortunately for the time she was here, she's worked with Sherry to cross-train. And so Sherry has gained a lot of knowledge, not only through Joe Parson, but through Elizabeth. And, of course, Sherry's in the office every day. And then Philip will be in there 2 days a week, and the new person will be in June. We feel like any inspections that need to happen, we know Phil can handle them. If it's a larger inspection that's an expanded jurisdiction or what we call a level three, we already have people in place with the state who will come in and help us. For example, the St. Clair project, which is ongoing, that's a level three project. So we worked very closely with the state on that. We called them before Joe even left, and they've been handling that for us. So there's been really no lapse of service, and that's our goal.
On another issue, this has been sort of an ongoing and almost, I don't want to call it a simmering controversy, but it's also been, for the people who live in the neighborhood, a source of maybe discontent. There was a large rooming house built on Lyons Avenue, which is a very
first
narrow,
time I've heard about
street.
That.
Yes, yes. Well, You need to listen to your shows, your previous shows, or some old newspapers.
Really?
Get your hands on some old newspapers. But, yeah, I guess you dealt with this issue again because, I mean, it remains in the forefront of a lot of people's minds. And what's the latest on that? I thought a lot of this had been settled because apparently that building, even though people were not happy about having a rooming house on a residential street, it did meet zoning codes. It was okay, but I guess there's more to the story now coming up.
Without getting into the details and getting into the code sections and all that, in general, when it was approved for occupancy, which means then you can go ahead and move in, and you can also have the people move in to stay there, it was approved as a single-family dwelling under certain restrictions. And that fell in. Everybody says, well, how can I afford it? And I don't want to get into all the – because we looked at it. The city attorney looked at it. She called several colleagues. We looked at it at every level. And under the certain circumstances on which it was coded or which it was brought in and permitted, I should say, not coded, it was fine. However, we have learned, allegedly, there has been a change of use to where what it was originally permitted for has been changed to something outside the boundaries of that. At that point, then legally it becomes not, it falls out of compliance, which means we will send a cease and desist order until either it's changed back to the occupancy permit, which it was originally permitted, or changes are made, which would cause several different internal structural changes to make it to where it falls into the current use. In diving into this, our city attorney, Joy Stevens, worked several different avenues trying to find out exactly. As you know, we even went and looked at case law on this, and there was precedent for a hospital in Kentucky several years ago that built a similar building for its nurses. That went all the way to the Kentucky Court of Appeals and was upheld for that particular use if it's zoned or if it's in that particular zone and permitted for that particular use. However, now it appears that occupancy, that usage has changed from something like that to now where it could be considered maybe just a apartment building. If that's the case, then that falls outside the boundaries for which it was permitted. Because when you do a single-family dwelling, certain safety regulations can be covered to cover the whole house. When it becomes an apartment complex or an apartment building, then more stringent safety features have to be included in the house, if you get my drift. I can't get into all those because I don't have them in front of me, but just you can use your imagination and know that the more – if it changes from one to the other, one is more stringent in the safety regulations.
So where do things go from here?
Well, there will be a cease and desist order that will be sent out. I have contacted the owner, told him that this is coming, and that we will meet after that. Once we sit down and meet after that, we have covered ourselves. Beth Day, while she was still there, she had contacts in the, within the state building inspectors, building office, and she ran the whole thing down. We have all the information, all the data, all the code references we need. So we'll sit down with that individual and we'll say, this is what's going to have to happen if you're going to use it at this particular permit, or if you want to not have to do all this stuff, which could be costly to you, then you go back to its original purpose, and we'll see what happens. I don't know. At this point, we don't know because we've not had that conversation yet, sitting down in a room with all parties, but that'll be something that Mr. Hurt will be handling until a new person comes in.
You also have to reinspect the building if they decide to make it an apartment building.
If they have to make that, then that has to come up to code. It's basically that, and a 14-room building would have a lot more strict code because of that use than it would for a single-family dwelling, which people say, well, that's ridiculous, Mayor. A single-family dwelling? Come on. Well, now let me tell people this. Our own city councilman, Glenn Teager, grew up in an 8-bedroom house. I've heard of people growing up 10-bedroom houses. Okay, so what's four more? Yeah, it sounds ridiculous to some people, but really, if we do a research across this country, you think there's not a 14-bedroom house somewhere? I'm sure there is. So,
I saw it once on the Beverly Hillbillies.
I think you did, and I think there's probably been some shows of these large family shows they put on A&E and these type of things. There's probably some of that too now.
Featuring movie yes. stars and things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But yeah. here's the thing. You know, codes are there to be enforced, and that's what we're doing. That's what we want the public to know. Yes, it's controversial, but we did what we could do at the time. Now we're doing what we can do at this time.
Another note, you made a change regarding alcohol beverage control. There was a licensing issue, and the fee for the temporary license is being reduced from $166.66 to 50 cents. And this goes to
$50.
$50, I'm sorry. $50.
And my goodness, I can hear the people right now coming down here. No,
wow.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. But this relates to a proposal from Tony Pence,
right.
who heads Downtown Moorhead Incorporated. And this is in regards to handing out temporary licenses for different downtown festivals.
First of all, let me explain this to people. I am a Christian. I do not drink. However, I do not judge people who do drink. And in our county, in our city, we are wet. So we have drinking establishments that are in restaurants. And at first, the way this was presented to us a couple years ago when I first took over, I wasn't really in for it. But the more I've researched it, the more Tony and those folks have presented it to us, it's just something to add to festivals. Now, this is not – people don't want to say, oh, my gosh, we're going to have a family festival and there's going to be people running around drunk and all that. That's not the point. The point is to have it as an additional vending opportunity for certain events, not all events, and we felt like – looking around the state, the $166, let's just say $170 for a temporary one-day license was kind of cost prohibitive to get people to come in. I'll give you an example. When Guy Huffman, if you remember, back in the fall, I think it was, he had his photo art exhibit he had down in the conference center. We had a local caterer who wanted to serve wine for that, just for that one day. Well, once all the fees and everything were tacked on, it became cost prohibitive, but they went ahead and did it anyway because that type of crowd, so to speak, would like to have that. It's just, you know, kind of a hors d'oeuvres and that kind of setting. So I want people to understand that by doing this, it doesn't mean we're going to have, you know, beer carts on every corner and we can't have our Freedom Fest or our this and that, because that's not what it is. We're trying to do things that are similar to attractive that are attractions in places like Danville, places like Richmond, places like Maysville, other places do these type of things when they have different festivals. And again, it's a one-day thing. Now, it can be used up to 30 days, but that's for things like the Kentucky State Fair or you know, large. I don't think we have a festival over one day besides Poppy Mountain, and of course that's outside the city limits. So that's kind of where we are.
Again, our guest today on Front Page, Moorhead Mayor Jim Tom Trent. I'm Chuck Moroswell. Step away for just a moment. Come back right after this.
There are many ways to connect with Morehead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Morehead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
Welcome back to today's Front Page. I'm Chuck Meraz. Our guest is Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent, and I was going to ask you about the city budget. I know that that's still being worked through and has not been passed for the 2017-18 fiscal year. Where are you in the process?
Well, we had it all ready to go. We've traditionally put together a budget committee consisting of the city clerk, city attorney, myself, and three members of they rotate, three members of our city council. We've worked very hard. We meet with every one of our department heads. They bring us a wants and a needs sheet and two columns, and we try to work it out and do the best we can. We've been very fortunate. We've got a great team down there that works very hard in the administrative office. We've been under budget every year. All five departments, every year I've been in there so far, have been under budget. We've got all clean audits. We've come out with a surplus each year. This year we're about $1.3 million in surplus, which means traditionally we like to put at least $1 million in savings for any kind of catastrophic action or anything that would come up that we do not have budgeted, unexpected. And so we'll have about a $300,000+ extra for different things that we're just not going to spend because we have it, but that's there also for budget amendments and those type of things. So we feel very confident about it. What happened, we were going to prepare to have it and have it read at the meeting, this last past meeting we had on Monday. However, week before last, we got the we received a notification from KLC, Kentucky League of Cities, on our insurance rates. That really, as your wife knows, she worked there many years, that those come in very late, usually right around when you're trying to pass the budget, and that affects your budget because I'm going to tell people right now, believe it or not, we're one of the only entities that I know of, public entities around, that pay 94% of every one of our employees' insurance. If you have a family plan right now in the current year, we pay you a $14,400 benefit that we pay. So that's pretty good. Now, are our salaries up with places like Lexington and other places like that? No, but it's a trade-off when we are here. However, the insurance quote we got this year, just now, week and a half ago, our rates went up 20% in 1 year. Now, we currently pay roughly $800,000 a year just in employee insurance benefits. I'm no math major. I went to law school because I couldn't do math. That's $900,000 plus we'll be paying this year if it stays at 20%. Chuck, you're looking at $1 million of an $8.1 million budget that'll go to nothing but insurance. Now, I'm not criticizing our employees for wanting to be there. That is a perk. That is a reason a lot of them stay. We still have guys working on our public works who are making less than $10 an hour. We are trying to rectify that and get everybody up by the end of January. Hopefully, everybody in our city will be making a minimum $10 an hour. So before people start criticizing, saying, well, you can't pay that much, it's a balancing act. It really is. Do we pay them this much and not have insurance? It's back and forth. So we are working right now to see if we can do some sort of an offset raise, slowly start next year, not this year, slowly start with a budget in 18-19 to start paring that back from 94% maybe to 92 to 90, whatever.
So you'll be asking the employees to cover more of their own cost of their health insurance?
Not this coming budget, but we're going to set it up to where we have a year to work into that. But what we're going to do, though, is we're trying to work out a way to make fairly compensated with a raise or a series of raises that will offset that for our employee.
So you're making it kind of, as they say, revenue neutral.
Revenue neutral. So that's our goal. Now, for example, we've gone away from doing large raises. My first year as mayor, we decided to do a 45-cent raise. Last year we didn't do one, but we did one in January this year at 25 cents. Our goal is to do something around 30 cents this year. So if you look, that's almost a dollar in 2.5 years that we've raised since I've been a mayor. And it's my goal, like I said, to get everybody in the city making at least $10 an hour. So, but that again is a balancing act, because you got insurance that's pre-tax. You know, when you start figuring all that in, then you start figuring in a raise. You got to figure in raises that go on retirement. I mean, it's not just simply saying, here, we're going to give you a 25-cent raise, and it's much deeper than that. So right now we feel like it's not a good time to receive that in 2 weeks, make a big change in our insurance before we do the final budget. So we're going to probably keep it as it is, with a goal of getting a committee together and working towards next year, seeing how we can offset it with a little bit of a raise and bring it down, because we're getting to the point we can't get to where we're paying $1 million. And I mean, we can't do it. I mean, we're just not, unless our revenue really starts cranking up a little bit. That's a lot. That's an eighth. I mean, I'm not a math major, but isn't that an eighth of our budget? That's a lot.
And this is a problem all over the country, not just in Morehead.
It is. We have, you know, last year we looked for other vendors, and it came back almost the same wherever we went. KLC has told us that this is a problem or a concern all over the state, because they do. That's one of the biggest services they provide is they are a vendor for insurances for municipalities. And it doesn't matter. We looked at different carriers. It didn't matter.
It's always going up.
It's always going up, and we're talking about dollars difference, not thousands of dollars difference. So it is a concern. And with the volatile health insurance market, you know, people really don't know what's going to happen with they're going to have to adjust to all this stuff. So guess who gets to eat that up? The consumers, because the insurance companies aren't going to pass along, as they say, their costs. So until this levels out and until we get a better national situation that is more stable, I see it going up and probably going up 15-20% each year.
One other note before we get out of here. There was a resolution to withdraw from the interlocal agreement creating the Joint Recreation Board between the city and county that was on the agenda for this last city council meeting. And I was curious about that because I know the city and county have talked about improving recreational programs and facilities and working together on that. So I was surprised when I saw that.
Well, that was something that was proposed by myself. I was the one who proposed us bringing back that recreation. It was a commission at one time. Now it's a board. We call it the Recreation Board because it was been dormant since 2005, and we brought it back up. We're at the point now, and I'm an ex officio member on that board as well as Walter Blevins. But we're at the point now that board has gone as far as they can go. They put together, I thought, a really good, simple survey. We got good data back from that. 11,500 actual surveys went out. We got roughly 2,000 back, which is tremendous. And it gave us a good laundry list of wants, needs. Also gave us, more importantly, 75% of the people that responded to that, 85% of which live outside the city limits, said they were willing to pay $50 a year more in taxes to help upgrade recreation. So we've got a lot of stuff. We've taken all that information as a board, presented it to fiscal court, to city council. They know all that. We've given them the list. We've showed them what priorities we have. That group has gone out over the last year, and they've inventoried our recreation facilities. They've done a great job, okay? But they've gone as far as they can go. At this point, there's no funding mechanism in that board. They have to rely on a partnership between the city and the county. Right now, with the county being in the position where they're trying to finish off the jail, trying to get it completed, which it's looking great, and that's a great thing, they are really not in a position to make a large contribution at this point. So the city and the tourism and other partners were looking at maybe upgrading some things. So we just felt like probably the best thing to do is just let it go dormant again until the next time when we're ready to do it. They've really gone as far as they can go. We've talked with all the members. They agree. So when we put down withdrawal, it was probably more schematically incorrect. It should have said we're just going to go dormant like we did before until their services are needed again. Right. We're at the point now when we need to fund it.
Well, Mayor, we're out of time. We can continue this the next time you come in. I look forward to it, as always. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent on Front Page. I'm Chuck Mraz. See you next time.